Well, we had a great dinner, and that's not fair to feed the speaker before they come here, because you don't want us doing anything other, you know, that we shouldn't be doing after you eat a full meal. So I actually didn't eat it all, so you're safe. My name is Patty Sal. It's P-A-T-I, standing for Patience and Tolerance Immediately. My last name is Sowell, and if you leave the O out, I'm just swell. Didn't have a lot to do one winter, so I figured out my telephone is my area code, and it's Joe Pear. Got it? Okay. Moving right along. Had a big dinner, did you? My serenity date is February the 19th, 1984, and I'm the most amazed person here. My husband is still out there working on his story, and I live with a practicing alcoholic. And someone will say, you mean you still live with an alcoholic who's practicing and you'd still go to Al-Anon? I said, that's exactly why I go to Al-Anon. I have a great life. My husband and I just celebrated 34 years of marriage. And you and me are the only ones who remembered that. And I've been married four times. Three and four are one in the same, and that would be step two. And I came from a very loving, nurturing, caring family from Fort Worth, Texas. I mentioned this at a conference not long ago, and somebody saw me later and said, I have told that to everybody I sponsor because it's such a great idea. When my daddy came home from work, we would all sit down at the dinner table, and my dad would say to me, what did you learn today that you didn't know yesterday? What was the funniest thing that happened to you today? And what was the most beautiful thing you saw? And years later, I have, maybe I'll get to that part, I have a little step-grandson, and he came to visit when he was 9 years old, and I asked him, I said, okay, here's the deal. What was the prettiest thing you saw today? It's the funniest thing that happened to you? And what did you learn today you didn't know yesterday? He went, what? And the next day he had the answers to it. And I had him journal when he came to Texas. He lives in the deep south. And I said, this is your journal. And I want you to write in it every day about the animals you have never seen before and the foods you've never eaten. He will be 24 this year, and the first thing he shows a new girlfriend is his journal. There was no alcohol in my family. I went to high school, college, and then majored in industrial engineering, and I've done a lot of things in this program since I've been here. I'm a certified beekeeper in the state of Texas, and I raised exotic sheep. I was a mediator for the county in which I live. Someone came and said, you know, we ought to be mediators. I said, what is it? She said, we help people with solve their problems and work things out. I said, I can do that. I go to Al-Anon. I can do that. And so I did that for a while. And then on a trip, my husband, this is my opinion only, which is, you know, worth what. I believe that every alcoholic threads a fine line of genius and nuts and can flip either way at any time. And my husband invented a cruise control for motorcycles that was patented years ago. And he is probably one of the smartest men I have ever met. Absolutely adore him. And one of the speakers said today, the biggest thing that hurts my heart where his drinking is concerned is he's missing the joy. And you know, as soon as we pull out of the drive, he was taking me to the airport. I had to be there like 8:30 the other morning, and he said, you want to stop and look for a new sofa? I said, it's 8:30 in the morning. You didn't think of this from Monday to Friday or Thursday? You know, and it's just like, if we can just do one more thing, maybe she won't go. Wrong again. I absolutely adore him. And when we first got together, all my friends and his friends said, "You'll never stay. He's an alcoholic." I said, "He'll quit for me." I loved what I was hearing today about all the calls that you get from your sponsees when you can't do a dadgum thing about it. And the call usually goes like, "Well, he kicked a dog, he stepped on my toe, and he wrecked my car, and it caught the kitchen on fire." And I said, "Yeah, but it's really great sex, so that's why you stay." Yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah, y'all know. At any rate, I had a great childhood, great parents, absolutely adored them. My parents were married 56 years before my father passed away, and I still miss my parents today. I was an only child, and I was old as a kid because they treated me like an adult. And now I'm getting to be a kid in many areas, and if you know me long enough, you'll figure it out. And I've had a great life, and for those of you who are in or were in the military, thank you. I've had a great life because you put your life on the line for a bunch of us. Thank you so much. My husband and I separated once a year for the first 5 years we were together because I figured I don't need to put up this crap. And I would take my furniture, I would put it on a little trailer or truck. I had an old pump organ, and I thought, when he sees that pump organ go out of the house, he'll never want to drink again. He didn't even know we had a pump organ. I've damaged all of my furniture, falling off the trailer and all that stuff, and I'd put it in storage, and I had a motor home, take a little trip, and in about a month or so, we'd get in heat and get back together, and that we did it once a year for 5 years. And he said, he told me one time, he said, "I know what the problem is." I said, "What is it?" He said, "We need to get married." So we were in Kaufman, Texas, which is about as big as this room. And he went to buy a pair of Western boots in a boot shop. And he bought a pair of boots that had belonged to one of the Dallas Cowboys, and I still don't know who it was. And while he was there, there was a man working behind the counter, and my husband said, "We're going to get married today." He said, "Well, good, you're in the right place, because I'm a preacher." So we got married in a boot shop in Kaufman, Texas. And it lasted about a month, and I just told him, "I don't need to put up this crap, I'm leaving." And went and filed for divorce, and I took him the papers, and he tore them up, threw them in the floor, and that's where they stayed. We eventually divorced, but we never quit living together. More step two, and we remarried when the dog turned six, because she would go to school then, and she needed a name, so we got married again in Fort Worth at the courthouse. No, in Weatherford, Texas, in the center of the my downtown area. And he told me, he said, we had just started going to, he had been going to AA. He's been in and out of AA for 31 years. And it's like rings in your car. Sometimes they take and sometimes they don't. It just hadn't taken yet. So anyway, we got married, and we've been together about 37 years, but we've been married this time. I don't know if we should combine them all and then it make me look good. yeah, but he was very close to my parents, and he was close to my dad. And my dad passed away unexpectedly, and my husband began to drink around the clock. And it never occurred to me that my dad was the dad he never had. My dad thought he could do everything. My dad thought he was wonderful. My dad told him how smart he was and all he could do. And my mother would say to him, "This is the boy I never had." And when he was first sober, well, my father passed away a month later. My mother was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and that was a whole new ball game. I've got him drinking around the clock and my mother looking at me and saying, "You sure do look familiar. Do I know you?" I said, "Yeah, I work at the bank." She said, "Oh, yeah." Yeah, that's where I'd seen you. I didn't work at the bank, and she had never even been in the bank. And she looked at me one day, and my mother and dad used to play 42 with some other couples, and all of the other women, everybody had passed away except one old man. And my mother, when I was driving, she said, "I like Uncle Buck." I said, "Yeah, I like him too." She got me by the arm. She said, "I mean, I really like Uncle Buck." I'm thinking, "Oh, dear Gussie." And we drive a little. She said, "I'm telling you, I really like Uncle Buck." And I said, "Oh, boy, oh, boy." And, of course, my mind went wild. And she just really liked Uncle Buck. We had a live-in nurse. I sat in the middle of her living room floor crying my eyes out because I thought, what will we do? What am I going to do? Because now she lived at a retirement lodge with my dad when he passed away. And they had to put a shunt in her brain so she wouldn't lose the motor control of her arms and legs. And the first time when she woke up, she called me by name, was glad to see me. And remembered addresses, people, phone numbers, everything. I thought, wow, this really worked. And I went down to the lodge one day, and one of the old ladies in there said to me, "We can't keep doing this." I said, "Doing what?" She said, "We're doing everything for your mother because she can't remember how to dress." And I went to her house, sat down in the middle of the floor, and cried my eyes out. And a man called that had worked with my dad and said, "I don't think you may know this, but your dad had a policy, an insurance policy, that had live-in care for your mother for the rest of her life." So we had a nurse staying with her, and we hired her out from under the agency she worked for, and she lived with my mother for 5 years before my mother passed away. And I used to tell people, if you've never seen an angel, I can show you one that walks among us. And she had told me my husband had started to drink again the day my dad passed away. And it got worse and worse and worse. And the nurse said, "Have you ever thought about going to Al-Anon?" I said, "I don't drink. I don't need that." And people came out of the woodwork saying, "You ever thought about going to Al-Anon?" I said, "Not a chance. I don't drink. I don't need it." She said, "Well, it's for friends and alcoholics." I said, "Well, I'm not an alcoholic and I don't have any friends, so I'm not going." And my husband and I had separated again, and we're getting heat. We get back together, and he said, "I have joined up with A&A. Well, I thought he'd gone to work for American Airlines. And he said, "And there's a place for you to go, too." Well, he had told me that often enough, but it didn't sound like Al-Anon. He said, "And I'm going to take you to your first meeting." On the way, he said, "Don't tell them I cleaned out your bank account. Don't tell them I sold your clothes. Don't tell them I locked you out of the house." And I thought, what are they going to do to me? I figured I'd get there and there'd be a light bulb hanging over a little stool and they were going to say, "What did he do to you?" Well, as soon as he gets me in the room, there wasn't any little stool. And as soon as they shut the door, I said, "Excuse me, I don't think you know why I'm here." They said, yeah, we know. Sit down. I said, no, you tell me how to fix him and I'll be okay and I will be out of your hair. And they said, no, just sit down. Well, they wouldn't let me talk. No, I didn't like that. Well, as the meeting goes on, I start to read the things on the wall. I'd never seen the 12 steps. I'd never seen the warranty and the guarantee of the 12 traditions. Never seen the concepts. Never seen anything. Had never heard the Serenity Prayer. And the only thing that made any sense was you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. And I thought, wow. See, I'd been hearing, if it weren't for you, I wouldn't have to drink. And I bought it. This is the man I love with all my heart. Why would he lie to me? Why would he trick me? So he says, we get over the meeting, and they still hadn't let me talk, but now I've heard enough just to be dangerous. So we get in the car, and he says, "Well, how did you like it?" I said, well, let me tell you this. I didn't cause it, I can't control it, and I can't cure you. And you better learn about those 12 things that are side by side with the other 12 things and then the other things on the other side of them. And you better get a sponsor. And you better work all that mess. And I am no longer responsible for your actions. You have to take responsibility for yourself. And that's what I learned. I thought he'd gonna snap the steering wheel right off the column. We got home the next morning at 6:30, he locked me out of the house. Told me I didn't live there anymore. He said, but you can take the dog. So I had the dog, and I didn't know where to go. I went to my mother's, and I just sat on the floor and cried. And I went down to see my mother, and the nurse said, you better seriously think about Al-Anon. I said, I've already been. And she said, really? And I was, as the theme is, at the jumping off place. I didn't know whether to, you know, or go blind. And I was just terrified. I didn't have one other person to say, what do you think? What do you think I ought to do? There was no one I could turn to, no one I could ask. And I had the dog locked out of the house. And I had worked with a man who lived on one of our area lakes and had cabins on his place. And I went out to his house, and I got out of the car, and he came out, and he said, my God, what has happened to you? Well, that was a perfect opportunity to tell him. And he said, well, you can stay in one of the cabins with the dog, but you must go to Al-Anon. I said, I've already been. He said, really? How long have you been going? I said, once. He said, no, you must go to Al-Anon. And my first home group was the Harbor in Fort Worth, Texas. And I went 10 meetings a week, and I still cover about 5, and absolutely love it. All of the other things I told you about that I did, could do, wanted to do, I'm not unlike anyone else in a 12-step program. When I get the goody out of it, I'm moving on. And so now I'm going to meetings, and I'm hearing things like, well, first, in the first meeting, I went to the Harbor, and I was just a basket case. And there was a young girl doing a literature study. And I went in, and they were doing all the opening. I said, excuse me, I hate to interrupt your book club, but I don't think you understand why I'm here. And they said, well, just keep coming back. I said, I don't want to come back. I want to know how to fix him, and I'll be okay. And they said, just keep coming back. What a fat chance. Well, then I begin to go. I'm still going, crying my eyes out, and then I hear, need to get a sponsor. And a sponsor. Now, one of those four husbands was a sport figure, and he had sponsors of wheels and tires and oil and gas and stuff. And I thought, well, I guess I'll have to go to Texaco, and maybe they, because nobody asked me for money. So I thought, well, they'll give me a scholarship, then I'll have a sponsor, and I can go to their group. I thought, that doesn't even sound good to me. And I went across town to another group, because, see, I didn't want them to know how dumb I was. So they're having an ask it basket, and someone had written down all their questions. I wrote down, how do you pick a sponsor? Folded it up, threw it in the basket. And a lady sitting 2 seats from me unfurls a little piece of paper that said, will we have good sex when he gets sober? And will he wear red socks? She leaned over to me and said, doesn't matter about his socks. The sex will get better. And I thought, wow, got hope about the sex, but hell, I didn't write that question. And someone said, whoever wrote that, we'll answer it after the meeting. Well, I still didn't know. So when I couldn't get the right answer, I didn't go to Al-Anon and ask them. I'd go in AA. Does that make sense? And ask them, what do you think I should do? And they'd say, get in that room and do whatever they tell you. So I learned that you pick a sponsor who has a sponsor. You pick a sponsor who's worked the 12 steps. You pick a sponsor who has a working relationship in her community and with her family. and she has something else you want, and it's not their significant other. So I went to a meeting. There's a lady doing the steps, and her sponsor was there. So I knew she had a sponsor, knew she'd work the steps. I knew her husband. He was working active in AA. So now they've told me she might reject you. I said, why would she do that? I said, she might be busy. I said, I thought you were supposed to care. And he said, well, you just ask her. Well, now I'm afraid she's going to tell me no, so I didn't want to be embarrassed in front of you. So I asked her after the meeting, would you come in the closet with me? So she and I are in a closet, and she's a large boobed woman, and we're boob to boob. And I said, would you think about her? Would you be my sponsor? And a tear rolled down her cheek. And I thought, uh-oh, she's heard the deal about the Red Sox and the sex. So I must put her at ease. And I said, you know, I think it'll be of beneficial information for you to know I've already finished the 12 steps. Really? I said, yeah. I said, when did you do those? I said, riding around the car one day. She said, really? What were your character defects? Now, there were no steps and no traditions in that closet. I didn't have a clue what she was talking about it. She said, well, what were your character defects? I said, well, I probably swear too much. She said, well, that's not it. She said, this is what I heard her say. Now, I think what she said was, this is what I would like you to do. But what I heard was, this is what you will do if I sponsor you. You will work the 12 steps. You will pray when you get up in the morning. You'll read your literature. You will call me. You'll go to a meeting, and you'll pray at night. I said, do I have to get on my knees to do the praying stuff? She said, I prefer. I said, well, you see, when I'm, she said, I prefer. I said, well, look, when I'm, she said, I prefer that you do. I thought, it's my house. She'll never know whether I did or didn't. And I heard someone say, I stand to walk, I sit down to drive, and I lay down to sleep, and I kneel to pray. I can do these in any of the given position. I do them best in the appointed position. But when I kneel to pray, there's no doubt who's talking to who. And from that day forward, I've never had a problem kneeling to pray. Well, she had me to work the steps through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in the first step, said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. First word, we. First word in the traditions is our. Together we can, apart we can't. Admitted we were powerless. I didn't think I was powerless. I'm not drinking. I'm the one holding all that together. I'm the one who takes a tray of chocolate milk and cinnamon toast and heaves it into a revolving fan, watching it hit the walls, running down the walls, screaming at the top of my lungs while he's sitting very quietly drinking. I'm the one who runs the stop signs. I'm the one who gets the tickets. I'm the one who gets the dents in the car. I become emotionally drunk when those I love drink, and my behavior becomes unacceptable. See, my problem was manipulation and control. Yeah, it is kind of funny, isn't it? And I had started that when I was about 6 years old. This little girl lived next door to us, had beautiful, blonde, golden, curly hair. My mother went to the beauty parlor every week, and I got to walk with her down to the beauty shop, and I got to watch them put stuff in her hair, curl it, put things on her head, and they were painting fingernails and pulling eyebrows out. I loved it. I loved the way it smelled. I loved being in there. But I never got anything done. So I told the little girl, I said, I think I can help you. I said, go in the garage. She went in the garage. I had a little stool. I said, sit here. And I draped her with one of my mother's bath towels. And I didn't have anything, so I found my dad's oil can. Had a little bleep, 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 bleep. I said, hold your head back. Bleep, de, bleep, de, bleep. That blonde hair was cold. It's black. It was jet black. I said, you look good. She went home, and you could hear her mother screaming clear next door. And she said, if you ever let that kid put something in your hair, I'm going to whip you and her both. And they could get away with it then. And my dad came home and gave me the lecture. You this, don't do that. You don't mess with other people's hair. Don't touch your hair. And he said, and for God's sake, don't cut it. Well, that's the problem. I didn't have any equipment. So I waited till things simmered down and told her, I said, now I've picked up the beauty shop lingo. I said, I think you have a standing appointment. Go in the garage. She went in the garage. I draped her. I oiled her again. But this time, I painted her face with Mercure Chrome. I had the first tanning booth in Texas. I said, you look really good now. Well, they didn't think so. I'm going to meet that young woman someday in a meeting. And she said, I'm going to be the one that you fixed. So he closed the beauty shop. And the second step came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Problem was suggested in one. Now I've been offered a solution in two. Why would I quit now? And I went on to three. The decision, it goes in, Charlie told you in length about it. I'm going to tell you short version. The decision I made was to finish the rest of the steps. And my sponsor, I did everything she asked me to do. She had me work the 12 steps through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Al-Anon has wonderful literature, wonderful ways that they do the steps. And if I sponsor you, you're still going to do it through the Big Book. I cannot give you what I do not have. And so we're going down. She said, now you're going to make these lists. She said, you need to make a fear list, a sex list, and a resentment list. I said, I don't have any of those. Don't you love it when somebody tells you that? And she said, what about resentments? I said, no, I don't have any of those. And she said, nobody's ever done anything to you that still sticks in your mind. I said, well, maybe. Maybe my cousin Joyce. I said, she caused a family situation that really tore up the family quite a bit. And I was a very young girl when that happened, and I hated Joyce with a passion because my mother became very sick over the whole situation, and you didn't jack with my mother. And I wouldn't speak to her. Every time we had a family get-together, if we were sitting across from each other on a dining room table, I made arrangements to kick her. If we passed in the hall, I could make an elbow fly and hit her good. And just kept walking, didn't care. There's a phrase, a little place in our One Day at a Time says, nothing consumes a person like the passion of resentment. And I had a hate going for that old gal that wouldn't quit. And people would say, oh, Joyce this, Joyce that. I didn't care. I did not care. Sex list, I thought, oh boy, she's going to want to know times, places, guys' names, stuff. She said, no, this is how you use your sexuality to get what you want. I said, well, I don't do that. Hell, I still do it today. You know, women they're a pretty good target at some of that. I used to go to breakfast with two other Al-Anons one day a week, and then we'd go to our meeting and go to lunch, and they were both big knitters. And they said, you should learn how to knit. I said, I don't want to knit. And they said, oh, everybody knits. Well, that's not true. They might out here. I know there's a bunch in here who knit, but I didn't want to do it. Well, they got me to knitting, and then they said, you ought to make your husband a sweater. Well, I said, he didn't ask for one. And they said, oh, yeah, he would be so proud to wear a sweater. Well, they take me to get this high-dollar yarn and some buffalo nickel-looking buttons. I worked for 3 or 4 months and had about that much done. And I went to one of them, the lesser of the Al-Anons, and said, "You'll probably be dead before I ever finish that thing." And she said, "I'll finish it for you." Yes! I didn't ask her, "Can I pay you to do that? Can I wash your windows? Can I make you cakes? Can I cook for you? Can I clean?" I just acted really pitiful. 2 days she had it finished. I took it and I said, "I've made you this sweater." He puts it on and he said, "I don't like it." I said, "What?" He said, "No, I like the sleeve up here. It was a drop sleeve." I said, "Well, you just see if I ever knit you anything again." She said, "What about any fears?" I said, "I'm not afraid of anything." "Really?" I said, "Nah, maybe." I was afraid of the dentist. I was afraid of doctors and was afraid of dogs. When I was a little kid, my grandmother died when I was 3 years old, and she left us 2 dogs. And we were having an electric storm, and one of the dogs was up under the kitchen stove, and I was going to pull her out from under the stove. And she came out, but she grabbed me in the face with all her teeth. And come to find out, the dogs had rabies. So my mother and dad and I had to take the 21 shots in the stomach. Now, it was not a bad ordeal because the nurses and the people in the doctor's office always had a little something for me. When I came out, under my coat or where I had been sitting would be a little something for me. So I looked forward to going. I didn't mind that. Well, I was afraid of the dogs. Then it's time my mother and I are painting my bedroom one day, and she said, "Oh, tomorrow we're going to the dentist." I said, "What's that?" She said, "He's going to look at your teeth." She said, "It's fun." We go to the dentist, and I sit down in the chair. The door opens, and a man, about 8'10", comes through the door. Snow white hair. I thought he knew Noah. And I looked at him and let out a blood-curdling yell and wouldn't quit. And he grabbed me out of that chair and told my mother, said, "You take this kid and get out. Do not bring her back. Take her to a child dentist." Now, I had hope there. Could you see, I was a child beauty operator. So I figured one of the kids in the neighborhood was going to look at my teeth. Child dentist. Well, that wasn't it. They made an appointment for me to go to the dentist. My mother and dad went. We're downtown in the old medical arts building, 20-some-odd feet high. And we're sitting in the little waiting room, and the nurse comes out and said, "Drink this." I looked at it, and I looked at the door, and I thought, you know, I can be out of that door and down those steps before they can ever get their stuff together to get me. My dad saw the wheels moving. He stood up and stood in front of the door. And I sat back down and drank the stuff. Then the nurse comes out and says, "Come with me." And my mother stood up and said, "Oh, no, you can't go." And that scared me because my mama went everywhere with me. Said, "Come with me." They had me sit down in a chair, and they took leather straps and strapped my arms to the chair, came from behind and slapped me with a gas mask. The next time I went to the dentist, I was in college. And I walked to a dentist on campus and told him, "I am terrified of you, and I'm scared. And I thought if I got to know you, maybe I wouldn't feel so scared." So we went every day, and I went over and talked to him, and finally said, "I'd like to look at your teeth." He looked at my teeth, and he said, "You need to bring your mother and dad back next time." That means money. So my mother and dad and I went, and when I was 18 years old, I had all the dental work done. I had lots of pullings. I had a bridge work done, had a partial, an appliance, a lot of fillings. Excuse me. I've never had to have another thing done because I've never missed another dental appointment. Got those done. She said, excuse me, she said, now you finished your fourth step, you're to come to my house to do a fifth step. I went to her house. She told her husband, get out and leave because she's here for a fifth step. I didn't know what that meant. And she told me, said, sit down here. She got a box of Kleenex set next to me, and I thought, ooh, I don't look the likes, looks like the looks of that. She thinks I'm going to cry. Hide and watch this, Jack. So she comes in, and she says, read me what you have written. A good sponsor never reads what you have written. You read it to them. And I started to read, and she said, oh, wait a minute. Handwork. She got up and went and got some yarn and starts knitting. And I thought, she didn't pay any attention. She doesn't care. She didn't miss a trick. The only reason I tell you that is because you will hear you sponsor like you have been sponsored. First little girl I ever sponsored was in a women's meeting. She tapped me on the shoulder and she said, hi, I'm 16 and I have one child and another one on the way, and I want you to be my sponsor. I said, well, I'm not going to do it. She said, I want you to be my, I'm not going to do it. My sponsor standing there said, she'd love to do it. And I said, I'm not going to do it. She said, oh, yeah, you're going to do it. And you will do for her what's been done for you. Well, we did everything, and man, I tell you, she was wonderful. She's in your room now. You know, if you're looking for a sponsor in Al-Anon, you're thinking about me. I get through with you, go to church or join AA. So you got that to look forward to. So I'm reading to her, and one day the doorbell rings, and there's that little girl standing there. I said, what are you doing here? She said, I came to do my fifth step. I said, with who? She said, with you. You're my sponsor. I said, are you crazy? I said, go eat, go away, go somewhere. It scared me to death. I got on the phone, calling on the erroneous phone list, nobody's home, and finally some woman said, you'll do for her what was done for you. I said, really? Okay. Well, she comes back, and I let her back in, and I put the Kleenex next to her, and I said, okay, we prayed, and then I said, read to me what you've written. I said, oh, hold it. Handwork. I got to be doing some handwork. That's what my sponsor did. So I get a ball of yarn. I couldn't do anything but crochet. So I crocheted a chain because I didn't have to look at that. I'm just going to town and this thing going all over the floor and curling around. And she said, what are you making? I said, I don't know, but it's going to be big, whatever it is. When we finished my fifth step, she said, you know, this has come up recently in my home group saying, I'm just terrified to do a fourth step. You know, fourth's a snap. It's five you don't want to do. And so we get through. She said, we never do fourth step and your fifth step without doing six and seven. So we knelt at her fainting sofa and read the seventh step prayer. And she fell over backwards screaming. I thought, I've been to open AA meetings. I know what's happened to her. My fifth step killed her. She's hollering, rub my leg. I got a cramp in my leg. I got a cramp, rub my leg. I'm rubbing her leg. I mean, nervous as, oh, I was just really nervous. I just wanted to go home. And then we got her off the floor, and she said something like, go home, redo what you've done, or read up to now, and take a bubble bath and put candles or some dadgum thing. I went home. I was a nervous wreck. And she said, we're going to go over what you've done, see if you want to do anything different. So we did that, and she said, now we're ready for you to make your amends, make your list of, you know, your amends. Well, Joyce was right on the top of the list. And she told me, when you make your first amends, you need to make it to your husband. I said, I'm not making one to him. He's the one drinking. I'm not drinking. I'm not making amends. She said, your first one will be to him, and it will be a blanket statement. It's not up for discussion. Okay. So I go home. He's watching television. I cut the TV off, stand in front of him, said, if I ever made you mad, hurt your feelings, caused you any jealousy, I apologize. That's it. Turn the TV back on. He said, wait, come back. Come. I said, hey, that's an amend. You can take it or leave it. And that, folks, is why 10 is close on the heels of 9. One of my friends said, promptly admitted, I do a lot of promptlies. My husband and I work together. I run the forklift and the bulldozer, and I wash and clean trucks and cars on Monday, and I'm outside cutting trees and doing all that outside stuff. And so I make quite a few promptlies. Now, I'll tell you the beauty of that particular step was one day we were out in the yard, and he told me, he said, go get the forklift. And I said, I don't want to. He said, I don't want to be married to you. I said, I don't care. He said, I want a divorce. I said, I don't care. Take it up with God. You guys go down to the courthouse. Let me know what happens. And I walked to the house. It wasn't about 3 minutes. He was in the kitchen with me. He said, is there anything I can help you do in the kitchen? Do you need the garbage out? Do you need anything done? You see, as lame as it was an amends. And I had enough sense at that point to accept it and say thank you. I didn't have to smart mouth him. So now we're doing that, and then we get on to the continuation. And 11 sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Now I'm going to get back what I gave up in 1 here if I can constructively use it. I'm going to get a little power back. God is everything or he is nothing, and he is everything in my life. I could have spent this whole time telling you about the miracles in my life. One of the first things that happened when I was very young, way before AA and Al-Anon, I worked in a clinic, and one day a lady came in, and I had roses on my desk, 2 little roses, and she said, oh, thank goodness. She said, I've been praying all week that if all my tests were to come out good, I would see some red roses, and you've got the roses. Now I'm a smart-ass kid, and I'm thinking, if she had any faith, why would she have to ask for a sign? Came a time I asked for a sign, and I was in the process of a divorce, and I got on my knees in front of a window, and I asked God if I'm supposed to do this. Now, you know, she asked for flowers. You think I'm going to ask for flowers? Nah, I could drive by the florist. I said, okay, God, if I'm supposed to do this, you'll have it snow on Christmas. I bet old Charlie's never seen snow on Christmas, but maybe once in Texas. And I had a new little boyfriend, and we'd gone down to East Texas, down to East Bernard or South Texas somewhere. And we're coming back home about 3 o'clock in the morning to go back to Fort Worth, spend Christmas with my mother and dad. And he hollers, wake up, you're not going to believe it, snowing. It was 70 degrees in Houston that day and no report of snow. It was snowing so hard we couldn't see. We saw headlights in the distance, and when we got together or met, the snow was gone. My husband will do pretty much anything I ask him to do. And I asked him one time, I said, you know, I've always wanted a Christmas tree lot. I don't know where this comes from. at any rate, he said, okay, we've got the land to do it, and we got a Christmas tree lot. And we would stand 50 trees, and we would buy 300 trees. And I got ready to go in one night. I was getting ready to take a shower, and I reached up to take my earrings off, and one was gone. And I thought, oh, it's out on the tree lot. I'll see it in the morning because the sun will be out, and it'll shine. I'll see it. And I got up the next day and went out, looked, no earring. I took 300 trees from pallets and moved them to these pallets, no earring. Move these back where they originally were, 300 trees. I thought, you didn't ask God about this. I got on my knees in the tree lot, and I said, okay, God, if I've placed more importance on that earring than you, you can have it. but I'd really like to have it back. I live on a main highway, and a lady pulls up in a car on the highway, pulls off on the shoulder, gets out of the car and said, "Did you lose this earring?" And that's how my God works. This little thing I have around my neck, it's two little pearls in a pod. It's two peas in a pod. And one of my closest friends owns a jewelry store, and her son made it for me. He said, "Because you and Mama are like two peas in a pod." He didn't make her one. He just made me one. And I went to North Carolina. We went to a dinner. And when we came out, a lady said, "That thing you had on your neck's gone." I said, "Really?" And I'm thinking, my goodness, how am I going to tell her I lost that thing? Got back to the convention center, got on my knees, and I said, "Okay, God, you know where it is and I don't. If you've placed more importance, if I have, you can have it. I really like to have it back." So a lady and I walked to her room. It was an outside kind of deal, and the sidewalk was laid out in a herringbone design. And she went into her room, and mine was further down, and there's like a little glow or something on the sidewalk, like someone had a TV on. And it just was right in front of me, and when I got to the curb, to the parking lot, just the top of it was sticking out. My God is everything or he is nothing, and he is everything. You know, I tell people, we've had some really bad storms in my area, and I said to people, you know, if you think there's no God, listen to the weatherman. And we got down to the 12th step. You see, and I think it's been mentioned, I don't think that we carry the message to each other in our own groups. We are the message in our groups. Tell us, carry the message to others in Al-Anon. That's the only word changed in the 12 steps between AA and Al-Anon. In AA, they carry it to other alcoholics. We got the rest of the market. We can stop them at Dillard's or Macy's or anywhere. I'm never aware that I ever carried the message anywhere. And I went somewhere, and my sponsor told me you get to the meeting 30 minutes ahead of time, you stay 30 minutes after, and sometimes that's the best meeting. And I had to go pick up a lady who didn't drive about 25 miles from me, and then I took her back over by TCU to a meeting. And she just plops down because God knows she's tired. She hadn't done anything. And so I'm putting out all the books and the literature and getting the room set up. And there's a young man standing in the corner. And I said, "How are you?" And he said, "Is this AA or Al-Anon?" I said, "It's Al-Anon." He said, "My mother goes to Al-Anon." I said, "Really? Who's your mother?" He said, "You wouldn't know her." Now I've become Barbara Walters, and the interview is about to begin. I said, "Okay, where does your mother go to meetings?" He told me. I said, "I sit next to your mother and your aunt every Friday night." He said, "No, you made a mistake. My aunt's dead." I said, "The hell she is. She's in that meeting. You're probably loaded or something and didn't know it. But she's alive and well." He said, "I work at the steel mill." I said, "I don't care where you work." He said, "I live on 8th Avenue. I said, "I don't care where you live. Get back with your family. They need you." And I look at her, the woman I brought, she's sitting there going, now I'm getting a little resentment to her because she's picked sides, I could tell. He's gone. She said, "What is the matter with you?" I said, "Me? It's your mouth flopped open." She said, "That isn't his mother's. That's not his aunt. It's his mother's cousin. And you owe them an amends." I thought, how are you going to get home, hon? Can't drive? Well, we go to the meeting Friday night, and I tell his mother, "I'd like to talk to you." I said, "I believe I owe you an amends." And I was telling her what had happened, and she just looked at me, and I felt about that big. I don't know what we did in the meeting, because all I could think was, should I clean her house? What can I do to make this right so I'll feel better? Which that's not what it's about. After the meeting, she said, "Would you tell his dad what you told me?" And he said, "Oh, no, that's his mother's, that's my wife's cousin." I said, "Yeah, I've heard a lot about that lately." She said, "How did he look?" I said, "He had on navy slacks, ox blood shoes, new shiny shirt, starched, looked like $1 million. I can see that kid in my head if he was standing right there." She said, "Does he live in Fort Worth?" I said, "He lives on 8th Avenue. She said, "Does he have a job?" I said, "He works at the steel mill." She said, "We don't drink and use in our house, and we asked him to leave 3 years ago, and you brought the message that he was still alive." Now, what was talked about, I don't think you ever make a mistake in telling someone what you are doing. I came back on a plane from somewhere, and there was a young girl sitting next to me, and she said, "You live in California?" I said, "Nope." "Oh," she said, "you visiting in California?" I said, "Nope." She said, "You have family in California?" I said, "Nope." "Oh," she said, "you live in Dallas?" I said, "Nope." She said, "You have family in Dallas?" I said, "Nope." She said, "Are you on vacation?" I said, "Nope." I said, "If you must know, I've been to an Alcoholics Anonymous conference with Al-Anon participation. Do you know what I'm even talking about?" She said, "I have 2 months sobriety at the Preston Group in Dallas." So I don't think you ever make a mistake. My husband and I had gone to breakfast one Sunday morning, and the server came up. She put the water down. She looked at me. She said, "Oh, I know you. Oh, I know you. Oh," she said, "I can't figure it out, but I know you. I know you. Oh, I can't think." And I'm thinking, oh, whoa. Well, she leaves and comes back with the menus, and she says, I know you. I just know I know you. She said, "Do I look familiar to you?" I said, "I've never seen you before in my life." I knew exactly who she was. I knew where she went to meetings. She never came back to the table. Afterwards, my husband said, "Well, that could have been a bad come off." Now, he's still drinking. What's he got to protect there? You know, he sits in the car in the garage with the radio playing, drinking. Everybody can hear it on the highway, and he's worried, you know, somebody might find out. And he said, "Well, it could have been a bad come off." I said, "Well, it wasn't. It's okay." The woman we were with said to me, "It's one of your Al-Anon buddies, wasn't it?" I said, "Yeah, it was." And what he does not know to this day, it was that woman and her husband that sent me to Al-Anon. And I'm extremely grateful to them. What it's like today is wonderful. I have a great life. I couldn't pack another thing into it. We have a dog. Some of you've heard about the dog. I was out here, I believe, when my husband called one day and he said, "We got a dog." I said, "We do." He said, "Yeah, but you can't touch him." I said, "What's the matter with him?" He said, "He's wild. Can't touch him." I said, "Really?" I come home and we've got some acreage and I could see the dog running through the woods. My husband said, "Then that's going to be my dog because I've never had a dog." I said, "You know what that means? That means you go to the vet, you feed him, you take care of him, all of that stuff." "Yeah, I know. It's going to be my dog. But you can't touch him." Well, one day I opened the back window and he was running through the woods and I heard, "Come here, boy." He came to the window. I said, "Sit down." He sits down, his old tail wagging. I said, "I'm coming outside, and there ain't going to be any licking and jumping. Have you got that?" His old tail. I went out, sat on the top step. I said, "Sit down." He sits down. I said, "No licking, no jumping." He was 8 years old a couple of weeks ago, and he's never licked or jumped on anybody yet. Now, my husband has, I think you would call it obsessive compulsive stuff, along with alcoholism. Does that go together? Yeah. Where we should have a living room is my husband's campsite. And if you live with a practicing alcoholic, you know exactly what it is. Its sofa is piled with books, magazines, maps, stuff that hadn't been seen for 10 years. And I call it his campsite. Well, he collects clocks. In that particular room, he has 7 clocks. Some are digital, some are Westminster chimes. And one day I came home, he said, "We got a new clock." And I said, "We do." And I'm looking around, he said, "No, down there, above the baseboard, there's a clock about the size of a hubcap." He said, "It's Ben's clock." I said, "Good." So one day I wasn't doing anything. I thought, I can teach that dog something. My husband came home and it was Valentine. I said, we got a Valentine for you. He said, you do? And I said, sit down on the sofa. And I said, Ben, wake up. Ben sits up in his bed. I said, Ben, what time is it? He went over and put his nose on his clock. My husband said, that's my dog. That's my dog. I said, yeah, and he can tell time now, too. You know, when I came to Al-Anon, you're going to hear tomorrow from our lovely Katie, my sponsor said, you have got so much energy, I want you to take Jazzercise. I said, I don't want to do that. She said, that's what I want you to do. But I did what she told me. I got in the car. I didn't want to go. In my front yard, and I look back to see if he's watching. He's looking out the window, and I run head on into a tree in my own front yard. I thought, oh, God, I hope he didn't see that. Well, he saw it. I run a stop sign on the way to Jazzercise, do the deal, sweat, jump around, get in the car, run the same stop sign going back. I thought, boy, you better go to Albertson to get a Coke and a donut and settle your nerves. I go to Albertson's, get the Coke and the donut, and I am running up and down the aisle because I'm throwing stuff in the basket. I got to get home and watch him because you never know what they'll do if you're not watching them. I get out in the parking lot, and the car's gone. Well, I'd forgot to put it in park, forgot to put the brake on. It had rolled down a hill and up on a light standard. And I thought, oh, God, I hope nobody saw that. Get in the car, go home. Start taking my clothes off as I get out of the car, throwing them in the grocery bag. I get on the front porch. I'm half dressed. I go in the house, throw everything in the closet because now I can watch him. Well, I was in a store one day and a lady said to me, she was watching me, and I looked down and coming out my pant leg was a foot. And it was the old pantyhose still in the slacks. And I thought, what the hell? So I start pulling it, and those things will stretch a mile if they'll stretch an inch. They went up over my head and around me, and she said, what are you doing? I said, well, I think I just took my pantyhose off. And the manager came over and he said, what are you doing back here? And I said, get smart with me and I'll leave. I don't need this crap. And I went to a ladies' luncheon one day that my sponsor had gotten me into, and I had to go in the restroom. On my hip is a thing about the size of a baseball, softball. I thought, what is that? Take my slacks. Well, it's the old pair of pantyhose that had rolled up in my slacks where I'd taken the whole thing off at once. I got home and I asked my husband, I said, you see that lump on my ass? When I left, he said, yeah, but I thought you wanted it there. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, very patient. In periods of sobriety, he tastes things for the first time, he hears things for the first time, he smells things for the first time. Now, I live out, we're on a septic system. When you turn my dishwasher on, the bathtub will go brr, brr, brr. Or you turn my clothes washer on, and go brr, brr, brr. Well, he's got a few weeks of sobriety. He said, you better come in the bathroom. I said, what for? He said, I can hear people talking. I said, really? And I go in, and I had just started the dishwasher. It's going brr, brr, brr. He said, can you hear that? I said, yeah, I can hear it, but they don't want to talk to me. They want to talk to you. I've helped the boy all I could. If you have laughed today, thank God. There's not a lot of laughter in an alcoholic home. And if you can't laugh at yourself, you've missed the joke of the century. I absolutely love this program. You know, I was looking, it was your 32nd year. I was 32 when I came to Al-Anon. Now you're all trying to figure it out. You're wrong. I said I was 32. I didn't say I was that age when I got here, but I was 32 when I got here. Yeah, some of you got it. Okay. My prayer for each one of you is may the God of your understanding take you in his arms, hold you close, and make you feel like his only child. I am a recovering Al-Anon, and my name is Patty.